Welcome to the Course Creator Community Podcast. Your host, Mr. Jono Petrohilos, currently generates over $1 million a year selling his online courses. And now he teaches you how to do the same. Along with listening to our podcast, make sure to join the Course Creator Community Facebook group. It's one of the largest and most engaged Facebook groups in the space. You'll find the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get to today's show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Course Creator Community Podcast. I'm your host, Jono, and I am super excited because we have an absolute rock star on the line this week. Now, I know I say that every week about every guest, but this person actually is. I heard him on another podcast recently, a good friend of mine, Jax Hopkins. I know a lot of people listen to Jax's podcast as well, the Online Course Guy podcast. And this guy's story is amazing in like many different facets. What he does, he'll get into it in a bit more detail, but he essentially teaches toddlers how to read. And I think that's amazing as it is, the things that he does in that space there. I also did a bit of research and saw his backstory and kind of like what he's been through to get to that situation is really cool as well. And then on this podcast, he shared his journey in becoming an online course creator and what he did. I think at that stage, it was like his first 10 months or whatever. And it was just amazing what he did in that time there. It was super motivational, super inspirational. So you're in for a treat today. Without further ado, let me introduce the one and only Mr. Spencer Russell. Spencer, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. And you'll let the listeners know where you're based there, Spencer?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Awesome. Temperature and time over there at the moment?
72 degrees, 3 o'clock p.m.
Awesome. And as you probably know, I'm Sydney, Australia, 8 a.m. the next day, and about 25 degrees Celsius over here. But hey, Spencer, I obviously have done a bit of research on you and listened to a couple of things that you do. But if you want to let my listeners know, what is it you do? What's your course about? Who do you serve? Let us know about that.
Of course. Appreciate the opportunity to be here, talk to folks. I think the simplest way to describe what I do is I help parents and caregivers teach their little ones how to read. And I don't do work directly with children. I'm no longer a teacher in a classroom, but I help to coach the people who spend the most time and energy with their kids, which is parents. So anywhere from 18 months or so, people who are just getting started, want to give their kids a head start, up to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, kids who are already in school and are falling behind. I help give people the tools, resources, strategies that they need to actually help their kid grow and advance in reading. And I have 3 online courses. We run the spectrum from learning sounds to blending them together into words, to reading those words in books. I sell flashcards too that come with the course to help parents teach. And what people get when they sign up is step-by-step, they get lesson plans, they get resources, they get videos to help them know what to do with their kid each day.
Love it. And for everyone listening, I think I'm going to purchase one of Spencer's courses there for my partner's kids. I mean, he's not on the show to kind of plug his courses, but if you are listening to this and you do have kids that you want to essentially help them read better, I'll put all the links down below to Spencer's social media platforms, his courses, and his website. Now, Spencer, most people listening to this course are kind of new in the course creator space. You know, they're just creating their first course, they've created their first course, and they're starting to sell it. Now, you're a bit further along the journey now. It's probably been a couple of years for yourself, I'm guessing. But if you could kind of go back and share, I guess, your origin story. So if we can go back in time, if you put yourself in the position where most of my listeners are, if you want to share that story, like start where you want to start, where you came up with the idea, and just spend the next kind of 15, 20 minutes letting us know your origin story in online courses.
Yeah, of course. It doesn't start too long ago. I think the furthest back we should go is teaching. So I taught 2012 to 2018. I taught 6 years, kindergarten and first grade. And in that time, I got really good at it. So I won a bunch of teaching awards. My kids, my kindergartners, my first graders were outperforming pretty much everybody in everything. It's something I was really good at. I was awarded for, I loved, I moved to my school's community. And I don't have any family down here. So that's just what I did. Like I hung out with my kids and with their parents. I taught, I came to school on the weekends and I thought I was going to die a teacher. I thought this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And in 2018, when my partner found out she was pregnant, I knew I wasn't going to be able to be the kind of teacher I wanted to be and the kind of daddy that I wanted to be. And so I left the classroom and I took a job at an educational nonprofit where we help teachers, leaders, states figure out how to implement their curriculum. And so specifically, I worked with grades 3 to 8 in a reading curriculum. And my job was to help implement the professional learning for the teachers. And then eventually got a couple promotions. And then my job was to coach the people who were coaching the teachers. And I worked that job for 3 more years. And then I realized it wasn't for me. And when I say it wasn't for me, what I mean is I woke up and I wasn't excited to do it. Time during the day when I would be in meetings or participate in things or stuff would happen, it was kind of drain my energy. And overall, just like a mindset and an attitude difference between me and a lot of the other folks on the team. And I love a lot of my coworkers and am appreciative of the experience. But at the same time, last year, 2021, at the very beginning, we've got our first reports of the coronavirus and stuff starting to get locked down and people are dying, lives are changing. I literally had the conversation with myself, and first it was internal, and then it was actually out loud with people, that I'm not going to die at my desk doing a job that I don't love because it makes a lot of money. It just wasn't going to happen. And I knew personally at the beginning of 2021 that something needed to change and I needed to find something. I didn't know what that thing was. I just knew it wasn't going to be what I was currently doing. And you look on the news, you see, okay, 10,000 people have died from this and 50,000, 100,000. The numbers are almost hard to comprehend until it hits your family, someone you know, someone you love. You see the lives impacted. And when I quit teaching for my son. I quit teaching to be home with him, to go to his doctor's appointments, to go to stuff. Like, he became the thing in my life. And at this job, I felt like I was compromising that. I was compromising my energy and my time and my emotional resources to pour into him. So that job, I made the decision to quit before I actually quit, but I made a decision. Now, the kind of timeline from there is, I think it was February of 2021 when I made the decision to quit. And I went outside my house and there was like a little tree in our yard and I lay under it and I just meditated. And it was a sunny day. It was a nice day. I felt very calm, very relaxed. And I meditated for a while. And the idea just came in my head. It came at once. It was online course, helping people teach their kids how to read.
Love it.
It was just there. And I had been spending the months before that helping to work with my own son. So I had already proven, I'd already shown, here's what that reading process is. I had already gotten my kid reading really well at an age that no one thought was possible.
Wow.
And I had coworkers, I had friends, I had other people who told me, you're forcing him, it's too soon, it's too young, he can't do it, give up. And it was all fuel for the fire. It was all fuel and energy that I used every single night when I was working with him. And I set up my camera, I have on video working with him. Every now and then I give a little fuck you to the camera, to whoever's watching, a little thank you for the juice. And then I do my session with my kid, right? Because it was all about him. And so when I lay down and I meditated and I thought about it, I was like, I've already figured out the thing. I already know what no one else is doing or no one's doing well, which is helping really little kids learn how to read. And I know my kid's not reading because he's smart. Like, I sure as hell know this is not because he's a genius, because he's not. It is because I know how to do it. It's because I'm consistent. It's because I made it a priority. And if I can help other folks do the same thing with their kids can be reading too. And from that day, I knew this was a thing. This is what I'm going to do. We had taken a speech course. We had taken a feeding course. We had taken like a motor skills course. This is just something that parents of toddlers do. They buy online courses. But no one's tapped into that reading market. So to me, this is a blue ocean. This is a space that not only is like really, really wide and really, really big, the number of parents of toddlers who are interested in their academics, but it is something that no one else is capitalizing on. And I felt an incredible sense of urgency to move on this, not just because I told myself I wasn't dying at that desk, but because I didn't want anyone else getting in this space before me. I didn't want to miss my window and my opportunity. And from that point forward, it was just work, work, work. I do my regular job during the day, and then I'm doing this during the night, getting the website set up, getting the course up and running, getting the slides. I started pre-selling before the course was done to force myself to be done mid-June. June 2021, I launched my social media channels with no followers, nothing. I wasn't even on social media before this. And it would just work, 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 work from there.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Can I jump in and touch on a few things there?
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome. So for the listeners there, I think there's a few key points that Spencer did really well. Some of them kind of go without saying, but I want to mention them anyway because they're important points. Spencer said that like he was really good at what he did, right? He didn't just say, oh, he's an opportunity to make a few bucks or whatever, right? Here's something he's really good at and he's really passionate about. That's key number one. I think if you don't have that, it's going to be very hard to be successful in the online course space. The other two things I think he did really well. Number one, he found that opportunity. Like as an online course creator, it's easy to see what other people are doing and being like, oh, great, there's other people with, look at Jarks. He's making all this money selling online piano courses. I know how to play the piano. I'm going to do the same thing as well. Hey, he's a Spanish teacher. You know, they're making all this, they're selling all these courses, you know, teaching Spanish. I'm going to do the same. And look, there may be opportunity there, but like, the more people that are doing that thing, the harder it kind of is. Spencer's found, as you mentioned, a wide net. Like, this isn't a parenting podcast, but I'm sure there's people listening to this that are like, oh, that's something I'd be interested in. It's a really big market and nobody else is doing it. So he's identified that opportunity there. And then the third thing is the urgency, because half the game is just being the first person in there. So like if Spencer took a year, 2 years to do this, someone else gets the idea, puts it on, it's all of a sudden way harder. And my take, once you get in there first, it's so much easier. It's kind of like my background, Spencer, is in the fitness education space. So yep. I was one of the first people in Australia to put together an online course for fitness professionals to upskill, right? Just being first to the market, I was able to kind of get that following and build that audience and then get some revenue coming in and then put that back into advertising. And if you can get in there early, it just becomes like way easier. So there are three tips I'll give everyone from Spencer's story there. A couple things with there, Spencer. Do you want to let us maybe know the launch side of things? So you pre-sold it. Actually, let's even go into a bit more detail there. So when you were like, right, work, 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 you mentioned you pre-sold it first. So was the pre-selling via your social, like you were working on the course, obviously, but you had your social media platform, you were building that social media platform, you were selling courses on that while you were still creating the course. Is that how that worked? And if so, do you want to let us know a little bit about that process?
Yeah, the pre-sale was mostly to friends and family, although no one in my family bought. So
I'll jump in there for a sec, because that's a good, this is a common story with personal trainers as well. When we're studying our personal training certificate, all our family are like, oh yeah, let us know when you finish. We'll definitely hire you to be our personal trainer. And you know, you finish your certification, you think you've got a full book with all your family that have told you they trained with you. But by the time it's actually time to take the credit card out, it doesn't always work like that. So it's not just you, right. It's other industries too.
That's right. It's brutal. And so I was walking a really, really, really fine line with parenting stuff, because you never want to tell a parent that they should be doing something or need to do something differently. What I'm trying to tell folks is that they can be doing this if they want to. And even hearing that is tough for folks to hear if they feel like they're already doing everything that they can, to know there's some other milestone, there's some other benchmark, there's some other skill that their kid could be working on. And when I have a professional relationship with folks, I'm seeing them every day at work, I'm not making a strong pitch for my course. I'm not saying, buy this thing, your kid needs to be doing this. Mm. I'm saying, hey, by the way, I've been working on this thing for the last couple of months, helping people teach their kids how to read. If you're interested, this was a pilot. I named it the pilot. I told people this is a low cost, I did $49. And the whole goal here is to get feedback to help you out, but to help me. And if you don't win, I don't win. So if you want to join this pilot, send me an email to my personal email address. Be happy to share more information. No pressure at all. If not, no worries. But if you want to be doing some work with your kid, I'm happy to kind of give you some pointers and give you some tips. And I'm much better at selling than that little snippet, but that's what I gave colleagues. That's what I gave other folks.
This was face to face. You're saying, Spencer, you'd be at a barbecue or you're hanging out with people and you're just kind of getting that conversation and do it face to face, or was this in the DM, or where did these conversations kind of take place?
This was mostly Zoom. So gotcha. Like work calls, lots of Zoom. I worked for a remote organization. So we'd get in a meeting like this, meeting might finish, I might mention this. Gotcha. Sometimes I would text and just let folks know who I know have kids. Hey, here's what I'm working on. I drafted a couple emails. They sucked, but I just, shot folks a couple emails to let them know, hey, here's what I'm working on. Pretty much everybody either said no straight up or said yes, but then didn't buy. And mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of time before I got the first sale.
Yep.
And then the Instagram channel.
Sorry, Spencer. Oh, yeah. No, I was going to ask. This was before you started the Instagram channel. You were reaching out to people.
That's right.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so Instagram started May 30th of 2021 was my first post. And, that's slow going. Like I did a little bit via Instagram, but I probably had 100, 200 followers, just people I knew from life, not even people who had toddlers. And so it was a while before social media was really doing anything for me. The only thing the Instagram page at first did for me was it let people know that my kid could read. I uploaded a couple of videos, not showing his face, but a couple of videos of him reading. And people were like, holy shit. Like no one knew, like literally no one outside of my family knew what he could do. So the videos added some credibility to folks who might already know me, but social media wasn't driving any sales at first. It was all me selling to people that I knew or like friends of friends trying to talk with them. I would get on calls with people if they would take it. I mean, anything at this point to get a sale, I would do other than, compromise a working relationship.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. And then you made a few sales like that, just from friends of friends and that kind of thing?
Yep.
Gotcha. And then what was that process there? Because like a lot of people I know that do the live launch method is they kind of actually teach it live. It's a 6-week program. Hey, meet on Zoom. We do a weekly call every week for 6 weeks. Doesn't sound like you did that. It sounds like it was like, hey, you pay the fee and you'll get the course at this date here. Or do you want to let us know a little bit how that kind of worked?
Yeah. So I hired someone to help me actually design the slides. It wasn't video based this time. It was just slides.
Oh, so gotcha. Okay.
The course was slides with my audio in the background explaining things. It came with handouts and you signed up at this point. Like I didn't even have the technology right. So it wasn't even automated to the point where you sign up and you get it. It was you sign up and then you get like a one pager that says, hey, this is coming soon. I'm here to support you. I was offering calls to people. I was texting some of the people because I know them, checking in. I was checking the data every day to see if anyone had started the course or was taking it.
Wait, hold on. Let me get my head around this, Spencer. So it was like, let's say I was a lead, right? You got on the call with me. You're like, Jono, I'm creating this thing. You interested? I'm like, yep, I'm great. I pay the $49. Do I get access to something straight away in that gets big, I get more of that, or like, what was actually, I guess, buying at that time?
So in when I was pre-selling,
yep.
you got a handout that says this is coming.
Good. With a date or anything, you know, it's coming at this date here or?
Mid-June.
Okay. Gotcha.
Mid-June. And we launched June 18th, 2021. And that's, you know, I think the folks listening can probably take some lessons from it. But what I will name specifically is I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And doing PowerPoint slides, doing that kind of work, that kind of lesson planning, getting stuff done in advance before a deadline is not a strength of mine. So okay. That was my initial financial investment, was someone who that is a strength.
Mm.
And I gave myself no out. So that weekend before we finished, I still had a lot of work to do. So I went to a hotel down the street and I just spent the weekend 5 minutes from home. And I'm not leaving the hotel until this is done. Mm. And knocked it out, got it live. At that point, people would get the course. I was in Thinkific at this point. And so they get the videos, they get the handouts. It wasn't a particularly impressive product, but I knew it wasn't the final. I knew it was a pilot. I knew I couldn't get to the best version without people taking it. And so my goal was have people take it, see how it goes, see what I need to change. And eventually I'll reshoot it. I'll relaunch it. I'll increase the price and we'll take it from there.
Gotcha. Couple questions with that. Number one, how did you go about getting that feedback? Was there like a survey at the end of the course? Did you reach out personally? How did you go from, right, I've made these sales, I know I'm going to update it, and this is what I need to update?
I did both. I built surveys into the course. So before they could move from one lesson to the next, they had to give feedback.
Gotcha.
And then I'm also reaching out on personally.
Each. Okay.
On each of the lessons, be like, what was helpful, what wasn't helpful? Mm. I'd ask people why they signed up, that sort of thing. But we're dealing with 30 people. Probably half of which never logged in. And now The folks who logged in, everyone is taking it. So I'm kind of working off, you know, maybe 7 people's data and just kind of doing my best. So then I'm also texting, I'm calling, trying to figure out what's going on. Ultimately, the lesson that I learned, what I took away from it is, it's hard to get people to do an online course.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was going to get all this data about, you know, change this lesson, do this, do that. My biggest lesson was I need to make this easier for people to access, easier for them to watch. That's part of why I switched to Kajabi, because it has the mobile app, and having a parent who can take it really easily on their phone was important to me. Shooting videos and actually having them see me and engage with me was important to me. So round 2 of revisions was all about just making the course easier to take and easier to watch.
Mm, love that. And I think like, in the online course space, I'd say that's the most valuable thing. And I think that's changed over the past kind of 10, 20 years. Like 10, 20 years ago, like the more info, the better kind of thing. So, hey, if I want to buy this online course, give me as much info in there as possible. Like nowadays, yeah, info is good, but you can probably get a lot of it for free on Google anyway. It's kind of like, how can we stream like this? How can I log into this thing, be as easy as possible to log in and complete? So I think that's key there. And am I right in saying, Spencer, from here, it was like, right, I've done this pilot. I've got 30 people. I've proven concept. It's work, 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 work. Here's my mission.
As in, after the pilot, I was kind of set on the direction to go moving forward?
Correct.
Pretty much. I would call the next version of the course like pilot version 2.
Good. And actually, just this a question. I know you mentioned earlier you'd made the decision to quit your job to do the online course thing. You were still working in your job for the initial pilot. Is that right?
Yeah, that's gotcha. Right. And the second pilot. So it was probably August or September after that June launch when I launched another version. And that was when I set up my camera at this couch and I did everything out loud and I edited everything and I put it together. And at that point, I split the course into three courses. It was just one big thing together. And I think people were getting overwhelmed by how much information they had to get through. And so I said, let's just do this stage by stage. Let's learn the sounds. Here's that course. Let's blend words. Here's that. And then let's read books. Here's that. And so I split it out to make it easier. Recorded pilot version 2. At this point, I'm still in my full-time job. And I quit my job in November of 2021, 14 months ago, almost 14 months. And recorded the current version of the course last January. So each of the pilots probably lasted like 3 months before I iterated and re-recorded. And now we are in the current version of the course. And I think 2024 will be the final version of the course.
Love it. Question with the quitting the job kind of things, because a lot of people listening to this, that'll be their goal there. Was that an easy decision, a hard decision? Was it? And even if you can speak about some of the numbers there, you don't have to get specific in those numbers, but just in terms of like, was it like, right, I'm making just as much on this as I am in my full-time job, so it makes sense to quit? Was it more like I'm making not as much, but I know if I went full-time, it would be worth it to do it? Or what can you kind of share there?
I was making $107,000 a year at my previous job with very good benefits, healthcare, dental, vision, vacation, all that stuff. So six figures, toddlers can read. I can share these numbers. In November, when I quit, we had a Black Friday sale, which helped with sales. We sold $5,800 in November. Okay. And I had about 4,000 in expenses.
Okay.
So November was my biggest month at that point, and we probably made $1,800 total.
Yep.
Which is not enough to cover any of our bills.
Yeah.
December made even less. I think I was negative maybe $2,000 in December, maybe 4,000 total in sales.
Okay.
In 2021, I think we lost maybe $30,000 total.
Okay.
Which is much less than $107,000 that I was earning. So, you know, for folks listening, you know, there's two things that are true at once. From the outside looking in, it looked like a very stupid decision. The salaries did not match. Toddlers Can Read wasn't close to matching. If anything, Toddlers Can Read was losing money. I was paying for coaching. I was paying for support. I was paying for consultants. I was working all the time. And if you're looking at a graph of how much we're making month to month, there's no upward trajectory or no, like, you know, this is going to take off. And at the same time, it was very easy. It was a very easy decision. Very easy. The hardest part was explaining it to my partner and getting her support to do it. But I believe in myself. And I know that people say this, but most people are bullshitting when they say it. You know, like, you can say that you believe in yourself, but if you don't take a step, then you don't. You know, you can say that you're ready to take a risk theoretically, but if you don't actually do it, then you won't. You know, so when I was sitting under the tree and Toddlers Can Read popped in my head, I don't even think I had a name at that point. What popped in my head too was $1 million in 2022. That was the thing. I was like, this is going to be huge. This is going to be unstoppable. We got this idea. Let's lock the fuck in. Like, let's get it done. And so I had to operate in 2021 based on the 2022 I wanted. I can't say we're going to make $1 million in 2022, but I'm not going to leave this job. Or I think this is going to be the biggest and the best early reading program in the world, but let me wait for the salaries to match. Like that doesn't work. Yeah. It had to be, do I believe in myself or not? I believe in myself. Let's get it done. And if the business failed, you know, we would have had to sell the house. We couldn't pay my son's school tuition. We would have had to pull him from school. You know, my income was our income. So there really wasn't an option. It was, I win or we lose everything. And that's the position I put myself in. That's a position I feel very comfortable in. And the decision was quite easy. It was really explaining it to my partner. And then I was trying to leave my job sooner, but I also wanted to leave on good terms because I've been there for 3 years. And so I was finding a point where I could transition out without screwing over the company, where someone could step into the job. I could train them a little bit, get them set up and leave on good terms. And so that happened to be Thanksgiving break of 2021.
Gotcha. Now, there's so many good bits of info there. I want to break this down. And this is actually my favorite thing about you, Spencer, from what I've, the little bit that I've heard. It's that all in, it's that passion. I can't quite put it down to a word, but you explained it well there, where you're like, I believe in myself. And it's not just like, you know, pump up inspirational. I look in the mirror and say, yeah, I believe in myself and I do. Like, you can actually feel it. You can actually embody it. You know, that's the impression I get about you there. And a couple of tips for the listeners there. I think that Spencer's the burn your boats type of guy. It's like there's all these you know, quotes out there. A lot of people listening might have heard the stories. There was a, I can't remember what it was, I think it was in ancient Greece or something. You know, a general went over to attack Persia and he burnt his own boats. And he was essentially told his army, hey, we got two options here. We're either gonna win this war or we're gonna die. That's it. I've also heard Will Smith give a good quote on the treadmill. Have you heard that one, Spencer?
I haven't.
Okay. So Will Smith's got this YouTube quote. I heard it, you know, 10 years ago and it kind of really motivated me. He's like, hey, you know, I'm Will Smith, but here's the thing. I'm not smarter than anyone. I'm not more talented than anyone. I'm not bigger than anyone. Here's the difference between me and your average person. You get me and the average person on the treadmill, one of two things is going to happen. Either that person's going to get off first or I'm going to die. They're the only two options there. And I was like, yeah, like that sounds like something Spencer would say there. So, yeah, I mean, I love that story there. And there was something else I was going to add to that. Da-da-da. Yeah, all right, cool. So I love that there. And then it sounds from there, it was kind of like work, work, work. In terms of finances, Spencer, you said you had a goal. You wanted to make $1 million in 2022. Can you share that with us or what can you tell us finance-wise now? How are you going?
Yeah, so I can say I did not hit my goal.
Okay.
But I got a hell of a lot closer than I would have had I not had it. And, you know, 2022, there was a big shift actually doing the work, doing the business, the social media channels grow, the sales grow, the products out is with more people, where the goal shifted. And I had to be very honest with myself and honest with my team, the folks who were working with me, that this was no longer Spencer's business. This is our business. Yeah. I have four folks right now who are full-time with me and we share this business. And so I'm replacing I and my with we. Yeah. And our Instagram page, our business, our results, because they're in this with me too. And the goal shifted. You know, it's no longer Spencer makes $1 million in 2022, but we build the best beginning reading program in the world. Like that's what we do. We're just the best program. And so I can look at any decision. And so 2021, I'm making my decisions based on 2022 goal. Let's get super, super rich.
Yep.
That makes my decisions really clear. I need to quit my job. I need to do this and do that, right? Everything is through that lens. When we made the shift mid-year, I had our retreat with my team and we said, okay, best beginning reading program, that became the kind of like the light in the distance. That's the thing that we're driving towards. And all of our decisions need to be aligned. And so it's down to a granular, like tactical level of like someone asked for a refund. Do we grant the refund or do we say, no, you missed the 30-day policy? Well, if my goal is money, I'm keeping it. If my goal is best reading program, I'm giving the refund and I'm trying to get feedback on how to make it better. And it goes down to time and energy. There's times when I know what I need to put out to make sales is more content. I pump out more content than most people because I have a team helping me. Well, there's times when I actually need to address the content in the course where I need to build something or add something or improve something or spend time building the actual business and the operation. And that means I might not post or I might not do this or I might not do that. And that's revenue that we're trading, but we're trading it for a longer term vision. So in terms of the finance question, did not hit the initial goal, but our sites have also changed. So now when money comes in, we're thinking, okay, how do we cover the operational expenses, people's salaries, insurance, healthcare, that sort of thing? How do we make sure that everything, all our T's are crossed, all the D's are added? But like, then how do we pour that back into building a better product? I'm looking at how do I create books? How do I create resources, whiteboards and markers and all this sort of stuff? How do I put in these bulk orders? How do I get the best product? How do I revise it? How do I improve it? And all of the money stuff is based on what will this allow us to make and to create in order to be closer to the best with the goal of, I understand right now we are not the best beginning reading program. But I don't really think anybody is. I don't think any of us are getting it exactly right. I think there's parts missing. I've read, I've studied, I've analyzed, I've bought everything from every competitor. I know exactly what exists. And our team is driving towards the best version of all of those things. And so all the financial stuff, all the information, you know, that goal of $1 million in a year, like all of it is to serve creating this thing that we can put out in the world and be really proud of, that we're changing a lot of lives.
Love that. Okay. There's so many good bits there. And you reminded me of some of the other stuff I wanted to cover earlier as well. One thing Spence has mentioned a couple times is he's got a goal, whether it's money, whether it's having the best program, he's got that goal, but he works like he's got it now in a nutshell. Like, it's very hard, in my opinion, if someone's got a goal and they're like, right, I want to, whatever, make X amount of dollars. I want to have the best program there, but I'm going to do it once I have the skill set. Right, I'm going to do it once I have the money or whatever it may be. I'll even share a personal example with myself. Maybe, I don't know what it was, 5-10 years ago or something. I wanted to be like the leader in the social media space for fitness professionals. I wanted, if you're a fitness professional, you want to get better at social media, you speak to Jono. He's the guy, right? And there was a big conference in San Diego, the social media marketing world. And at the time, like, it was a lot of money, you know, Sydney to California. I had to get the flight. It's expensive in California. I had to buy the tickets. I had to, you know, take time off work. And I was kind of like, do I really want to spend whatever it is, $5,000-$10,000 for 4 days at a conference or whatever? But then in my head, I was like, you know what? If I was the go-to social media person in the fitness industry in Australia, would that person go to the social media marketing world? Hell yeah, they would. So I was like, okay, if I want to be known as that person, I've got to do that thing now. I've got to take that little bit of a hit now, but it's going to pay off long-term. And I think that comes across in everything in life. So I think that's an important message there. I love the I and the we thing as well, because I think a lot of people when they, course craze, when they start off, it's pretty much just them. So everything is I, Spencer, Jono, whatever it may be. And that's fine, but I find that can be quite limiting. That'll only get you so far if it's just you. And it can also be very hard to build a team around that. Yeah, you can kind of get people to assist you, but it's easier to get someone to build into that actual brand than it is to Spencer. So I think that's an important distinction there. And it's just so much easier to get bigger with the team there. I think it's an interesting thing with the money, like, because I feel like there's been two goals there. The original goal was money, and then it's kind of shifted to having the best program there. But in saying that, I feel like you've always kind of had a bit of a goal to be the best program as well. It was just a little bit more financial based initially, and it's just shifted a little bit. And I think that's an important thing for course creators as well, because I think initially money is more important. for most, like, they've got this course creator thing. They've got the passion. You need to have, like, the passion's a given. You need to have that passion there. But it's kind of like, if you're starting off and you're not making a lot of money from that business, or maybe you're not even making a lot of money from your main job, it can be very important to have that money as the driver. It's like, hey, I need to make X amount of dollars to make it worth it. I think it then gets to a point. I think there's been studies on this as well. They're based in the States, where it's like, once you earn over $70,000 a year or whatever, like, the more money doesn't give you a huge amount of happiness. It's like, right, I've got this, that gets me covered. You know, it's more a passion-based thing. So I think that's a natural progression there. But in saying that, I still feel there's like a thing that's got to be there that's driving you, and then the money will come with that as well. And I see that with a lot of people that like have success and then kind of get over it, right? Or they have success and they might sell their business. And it's just like, if there's not that driver there to drive better at something, it can become really hard. So I think that's an important message for the listeners there. There are a few other things, but I might just get into our... I want to touch on the thing as well. Like, going back to everything about Spencer with how he believes what he does, his actions match that belief. It's like, it's just so congruent. It's like, here's my goal. Here's what I got to do. Here's what I need to do to do it. So I'm going to put these actions into place to do it. There's no kind of fakeness there. There's no pump up. There's no like... that's the only thing there. He's got that belief and he works towards it with 100% conviction. And if you've got that, it's easier to win. So love that. Now, Spencer, I've just got some rapid fire questions that I like to ask at the end of the podcast. The first one, yep. I think this will be a simple one for you. What makes your course better or different than any of the other solutions out there?
Well, if you're trying to teach your kid how to read, the first thing you need is the actual conviction, belief, the commitment, the energy, the motivation to get it done. And you're not going to get that from a book on this. You're not going to get that from an app. You're going to get that from someone like me telling you that you can do this, showing you that you can do this, and interacting with you and encouraging you and letting you know I'm actually going to be here to support you. Me, like, not someone on my team, me. I've done it. I can help you. I can support you. You can do it. I can answer anything you ask, anything, behavior, academics, otherwise, I got you covered and you can do this. Because parents come home, they're tired, they're stressed, or they're already at home. They're staying at home with their kid. They can't find the time. They can't find the space. They can't get this kid to sit still. It takes a lot of motivation to actually stick to a routine. And so not only do I provide motivation to get started, I explain the science and the theory behind the reading strategies in a way that people can understand. Most people just say, do this day one, this day two, this day three. Not every kid's the same. So you need to be able to adjust the lessons to your kid. And to do that, you need to deeply understand how reading works. And I help folks understand that. And there's also a behavioral component. My reading courses come with a bonus course on behavior. I give parents tips and tricks and strategies on behavior that I've learned working with really challenging kids. And so if you can't get your kid to sit still, which they don't need to, you can't get them to focus, any of that sort of stuff, I can help strategize why it's happening and what you might want to do instead. And you're not going to find that in Hooked on Phonics.
Sold. In terms of traffic sources, Spencer, where do you get most of your traffic at the moment to make your course sales?
Vast majority is Instagram and TikTok. I have 200 and probably at the time of whenever you launch, it's probably 300,000, but 290,000 on Instagram, 490,000 on TikTok. The YouTube just launched, we're up to 14,000 there. And so there's a lot of folks who follow me on social media, and I've got a pretty strong funnel set up to a free training from there to the website. But on the back end, what we're working on is, SEO, blogs, website optimization, ads, some stuff to build stability, because the goal is that I can go weeks, months without posting and still have sales. Currently, we rely on me pumping out content once, twice a day.
That's such a smart system as well, because it can be very easy to get trapped, right? Where it's like, cool, you know, I've got this big social media following, I'm going to keep posting and that's how I make my revenue. That's great. But then you got to keep posting. So I like that direction there. Software stack, Spencer. What do you use for to host your online course on, and any other related softwares?
We use Kajabi. for the online course. My marketing team used Webflow to design the website. The website used to be hosted on Kajabi as well, but now we have kind of a custom platform there. Active Campaign for email, Zapier for the automations. We use Interact for a quiz funnel. I use Monday.com. I love Monday for project management, for sharing things as a team and keeping things organized. Slack to communicate internally. QuickBooks for finances. I probably have 20 others, but I'd say those are probably the main platforms. Oh, eWebinar.
Oh.
For my webinar, which I will go to bat for them any day of the week.
Okay.
They almost tripled my conversion rate because there's a live chat feature during my webinar.
Yeah.
And so when parents sign up for my webinar and watch, they're getting polls they can interact with. There's a chat feature where I can go in and answer their questions as they watch. And it's a completely different experience than you would get just kind of watching a video when you're actually watching and asking questions about your specific kid. So eWebinar is dope too.
Gotcha. I haven't tried that one, but I will definitely check it out. Awesome. Cool. I'll give my two cents here as well for the course creator. So Spencer's obviously using a lot of software there, and you need to do that once you kind of get to the stage that he's at. I'll share what I've found in the course creator space, and let me know your opinion, Spencer. I think if someone's just starting off in the course creator space, it's probably best to go with an all-in-one software like a Kajabi, a Usenla, something like that. The reason being, it probably, I know Kajabi is slightly more, it is more expensive than the other platforms out there, but it does everything. It's got your email, it's got your website, it's got your funnels, it's got all of that there. And I think that's really good for a course creator starting off. What I think then happens is you kind of outgrow it. And you're like, okay, yep, it's pretty good at everything, but Active Campaign is better at email than this. Hey, I want to get a WordPress website or whatever that's going to be better than this. So you then end up expanding again. So the reason I'm saying this is for the listeners, they're going to hear different things. If there's people just starting off, those people are going to say, hey, get Kajabi. It's so easy. It's got everything in there. If they're getting someone further along the line, they're going to say, hey, get Kajabi for this, get Active Campaign for this, get a website for this. Yep. That's fine for that person, but starting off, it'd probably be better all in one. What's your take on that, Spencer? It'd be your journey.
Yeah, I started with Kajabi. I mean, I really started with Thinkific, but that was like a pilot, and I realized it wasn't good enough. My personal opinion, I did not like it. And I switched to Kajabi and loved it. So we had just Kajabi for a long time. That was our website until like 3 or 4 months ago. That was our email. That was the online course. That still is the course, the checkout, all that stuff was Kajabi. I sold a lot of people on Kajabi without an affiliate link just to help people out. I will still do it. I don't make money from Kajabi. It's great, but it's exactly what you said, where we realize we've got all these people on our email list and we can't segment them the way we want, or we can't time these emails the way we want, or do this function, or keep these lists. And we can look at the price and say, okay, this is really expensive every month, but we can reasonably see in both sales and in time and energy that we're going to get that money back. Let's make the switch for this thing. And we've just done that, you know, time and time again, to the point where now we have a lot more software than I would care to have, but I can make a financial argument behind why each of us is saving us time or energy, or how that thing is producing more sales. But I would completely agree. If someone's just starting out, like, keep it simple and then just like, don't like, I wouldn't commit to something or marry something. I would keep it simple, literally get started and then use feedback from your experience and from other people about what changes you might want to make or when you might outgrow that thing.
Yep. 100%. Okay. Next question, Spencer, is around mentors. So you're a mentor for plenty of parents out there that want to get their toddlers to read better. I'm curious who your biggest mentors have been in the online course space. If you could give us essentially three, if you could give us a paid mentor, so someone that you paid money to, you did their course or their coaching program that helped you with your online course, an unpaid mentor, someone that you haven't paid, but you follow them on social media, you listen to their podcast, whatever it may be, and a book that you recommend every course creator should read if they want to be a successful course creator. So mentors, paid, unpaid, and book.
Mentor would be Jacques Hopkins Online Course Show, which is where you heard me. I'll put him in the paid and the unpaid category. I'll give you three things, but I listened to his podcast for several months, and that was the only source of online course advice that I got. And my focus was, let me find someone who knows their stuff well enough that I can trust them, who's done this themselves, who started a business, and who brings on guests that are thoughtful and that can help to build me up. And so I would listen to an episode a day or two episodes a day or whatever it was. And then I would stop when I had enough actions to do. When I've heard the lesson from the guest or I know the thing I need to do next, I would stop, I would turn it off and I would get that done. And then I'd turn the podcast back on when I'm ready to go. And with Jacques, it was, I tried to work with him a couple of times and his coaching program was closed or he turned me down. He even sent me a video turning me down, which was very kind, but I was convinced that he was the dude that I needed to coach me. And I kept trying until I was able to actually pay him for those services. And so that was really helpful. In terms of unpaid, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I would say two folks who unpaid, Bob Proctor, is deceased now, but I listened to a lot of Bob Proctor lessons and videos, and for over a year, the first 30 minutes of my day is listening to Bob and listening to him speak and hearing his philosophy on money and on wealth and on manifestation and all that sort of stuff. And I knew that Bob's not everyone's cup of tea, that not everyone's going to understand Bob, but I understood Bob. And when he says that you have to live it, you have to be it, you have to believe it, you have to make space in your life for the things that you desire, that really resonated with me. And so Bob was a huge source of inspiration for me. And the book, also the free resource, like David Goggins. His book, Can't Hurt Me. And currently I'm listening to a second book, Never Finished. And if folks listening to this podcast are like, oh, Spence has kind of an intense energy, or he's really serious, whatever it is, like, nothing to Goggins, you know, like he really searches for what our highest potential is. And he's not satisfied with anything. It's not satisfied being average. It's not satisfied just getting it done. It's have you done your actual best? And he says, I don't stop when I'm tired. I stop when I'm finished. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of folks who are trying to start courses or just do things in life, make changes, quit, leave a situation. And the people around you aren't necessarily the ones who are going to help you get where you're going. There's a lot of people who want you to stay where you are, who want you to do the same shit today that you did yesterday, who aren't going to understand why you're pushing, why you're still awake, why you're still working, why you're obsessing over those details. And I think if you look at my business growth, whether it's financial, whether it's in terms of social media, whether it's in terms of my team or my product, a lot of people would have been satisfied a very long time ago. But there's no part of me that's satisfied. And there's no part of me that says, you know what? Like, look what we've done. It's only been 14 months since you quit. Not satisfied. You know, you have, oh, these people with millions and millions of followers who follow you. You have like a celebrity who's asking a question, like blah, blah, blah. Like, not satisfied. Not satisfied until we've built the best beginning reading program in the world. And I need people around me who get that. And he's one of the people, one of the mentors. I looked up to Kobe Bryant growing up, who, you know, is a similar attitude. Like, what I want in my ears, what I want to be reading, what I want to be seeing, getting mentorship from, is people who've done what I want to do. I don't want advice from the guy down the street. I want advice from the person who has done something extraordinary that no one thought was possible. And so I try and pull, you know, Jacques gave me the technical part. Here's how you set up a webinar, the funnel, whatever. I think Bob really helped to shape my outlook and my attitude towards money, towards manifestation, towards energy and vibration. And Goggins is just the work ethic. It's just the drive, and it's the extraordinary among the extraordinary. And that is something that I haven't done, but that I aspire to do.
Love it. So many good bits there. I don't usually give my two cents on that, but I'm going to do it here. So yeah, Jacques, good friend of mine, and big fan of his podcast. The reason I like him so much is I feel he's one of the only people in the industry that's like, his piano course is still his main thing, right? He's got his piano course, which is going amazing. And his podcast is essentially right. Hey, here's what I'm doing in the piano course. You know, here's what's working, yada, yada, yada. And I also do this coaching thing. I think there's a lot of people in the online course space and even social media space where maybe they've had, and also with Jacques, like he's done it for, I don't know, what, probably 5, maybe 10 years now. Like there's a lot of people that will have one good online course launch. And all of a sudden, hey, they're now an online business coach, right? Or it's kind of like, you know, hey, you want to know how to make $10,000 a month? Here's my proven system. And it's kind of like they've only been making $10,000 a month for the last 3 months or something, you know? So what I like about Jacques is like he's very, very do it, very still doing it. And I think he's just, and also the other thing is like his course is on piano, right? A lot of the other online business people is kind of like they'll sell their own course on online business and they'll be kind of saying, here's what I'm doing. Here's how I'm making money essentially off what I'm selling you, right?
Right.
Whereas Jacques is a bit more like, hey, I've got this business over here. Here's what I'm doing in this business over here. Oh, and by the way, you can do my coaching or whatever as well, and I'll go into more detail. So I love that. I love how you mentioned Bob Proctor, because I've done 200 episodes of this, and I don't think anyone's mentioned Proctor or Goggins, to be honest. But I'm two big fans of both of those. Bob Proctor, I can't remember where I found him, but I heard him somewhere, and I'm like, all right, you know, I'm following this guy on YouTube. I bought his thing once. He'd send over like a daily 5-minute video or something. Did you ever buy that?
I discovered Bob, I think, shortly before he passed.
Okay.
So I didn't buy any of his programs, but I listened to enough of him, I think, to probably be able to send out a program on his behalf.
Yeah. Massive fan of his. I've still got a CD of his, Born Rich or something like that. Did you, you know that one? Yeah, it was like, I think it was a seminar he did probably in the 80s or 90s or something, but he's got it on a CD. Yep. His principles still hold up. Like they're not tactics, they're like life principles. So massive fan of his. And yeah, massive fan of Dave Goggins. I've read his first book. I only saw his new book literally last week. I went to the bookstore to buy some new books, and he did, you know what? He didn't make the list, actually. I bought 4. I'll tell you, yeah, you probably won't like this story, but only because like also his was a bit more expensive. Over here in Australia, his book was 60, 70 bucks. The other ones I bought were more around the 20 to 30 mark. So I got the affordable ones, but listen to this for these books, Spencer. So Elon Musk's book, right? Phil Jackson's book, the basketball coach, Danny Trejo's book. You know Danny Trejo?
I don't.
He's an actor, a Mexican American guy, and he was in like Machete. Do you know Machete? You seen that movie?
I have not.
Okay, well, he's in a lot of like Blood In, Blood Out, Con Air. He was in Sons of Anarchy for a bit. Let Me Break, like really big time actor over in the States. He's like 80 years old. But like he kind of had a rough upbringing. He was in jail till he was 30, you know, got out of jail at 30, did the rehab stuff, started acting at like 40, and now he's 80. He's still acting, and he's like one of the top Mexican-American actors ever at like 80. And I'm like, man, that's inspiring. And one other book that I can't remember the other one was. So anyway, David Goggins just didn't make the list, but I'll get him next week. But massive fan of his, and I hear him on the Joe Rogan podcast as well. So big fan of his.
Yep.
Final question, Spencer. There's one thing that you know now, if you could go back to the very start and do of your course creation journey and do it differently, if there is one thing, what would that one thing be?
Love the question. And the honest answer is there's nothing.
Mm.
And the reason I say that is because when I was listening to Jacques' podcast, he would ask a similar question. And my approach as a listener was, if I trusted and respected the guest, if I got the sense that they knew their shit, they'd been successful, I was going to listen to their tips, listen to their advice, and I was going to do it. And I believed in myself to the point where, even though I didn't have a course, I knew I was going to be a guest on Jacques' show once I launched my course and once I had my business. And I knew he was going to ask me that question. And as I was starting the business, my belief was, I am going to work from a place of, when I get asked this question, I can say I didn't make any mistakes.
That's
none consciously, you know. And there's a rule on my team about mistakes, which is, it is okay if we couldn't have reasonably foreseen it.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do something and get feedback and put this out, and we don't know how it's going to go, and maybe it bombs, whatever. A-okay. If we make a mistake that we could have foreseen, that could have been avoided by working harder or putting in the time or just being thoughtful, that's not okay. That's not okay. That's not the kind of mistakes that we make. We make mistakes that are unavoidable, that are just come with the territory of growing. And so at every stage of the business, I'm not going to say that the business was perfect, but the process was pretty tight. Like, it was all about growth and learning, and it was about doing. And so I hear people on the podcast go, you know what? My biggest mistake was not pre-selling. I wish I had, you know, something in place to make me sell. I'm like, bet, I'm going to pre-sell. People saying, oh, like, I didn't believe in myself to be able to do this, whatever. I'm like, okay, got it. People saying, oh, I needed a funnel, whatever else. Every single thing, I'm like, got it. Roger that, roger that. This person's mistake, I've preemptively solved for it. This person's mistake, I've preemptively solved for it. And the last thing on my list was all these guests who had said, I wish I quit my job sooner. I heard it time and time again. They were making the money, they were afraid to jump. I wish I quit my job sooner. I said, you know what? I'm not going to be that dude. I'm not going to sit around here a year from now, 2 years from now, saying, I wish I did that, I wish I did this, whatever. Like, I'm going to look at myself in the mirror, and I'm going to understand that if I failed, I failed trying. But I'm not going to be the person sitting here afraid to take a step. So I would say, mistakes along the way, lessons learned, but nothing I would go back and tell Spencer at that point, because I think Spencer at that point had enough information to make the next step. Love that. Just like right now, you know, the business will be different in 2024 and in 2025. I will learn a lot, but right now I don't need that information. I have enough to make the next step. I know what I need to do. I don't know the final product, but I know the next couple steps in front of us. And so we're just trying to work on process, doing things the right way, making sure that we don't make avoidable mistakes. So yeah, I would say nothing.
Love that, because it's a common question with podcasters, right? You listen to a lot of podcasts. Most of them ask their guests something like that. And I used to just take it as a nice to know. Oh yeah, that's a good point. Oh yeah, not bad. Oh yeah, a lot of people kind of say that. You've taken it next level. It's like everything specifically that successful person said they should have done, I'm going to go and do it. So I've never heard someone explain it like that. And I love that. Awesome. All right, Spencer, well, that's pretty much all I wanted to get through today. Was there anything I should have asked you but forgot to, or anything you want to finish us off with?
I'll finish off with one thought. Because you mentioned a lot of the people listening are kind of newly in this space. And if they finish the episode, I don't know how long this was, too long, and they're still listening, then there's some kind of desire there to either get this launched or to do better or to be better, whatever that thing is. I think I see a lot of folks who they just get lost in their head. They just get lost in thinking. And it's like, think, listen, learn. And there's a point where you got to turn the podcast off and just get shit done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you didn't start your business or this, you know, or anything else, or get to where you've gotten coaching people and supporting people and doing the podcast by just, you know, listening to a bunch of stuff, reading a bunch of stuff. You do that, but then there's action and there's work. And, you know, as we're doing the interview and I think about that group, like, it makes me uncomfortable to think that someone would sit and listen to this full episode and then tune in, listen to another full episode, and then tune in, listen to another full episode and not actually get anything done. Like, that makes me actually, like, frustrated.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard. It's scary. It can be tough. It's not going to be easy. It takes thick skin. You know, there's ups, there's downs, there's plenty of tears. You know, this wasn't a smooth journey, but it's a journey worth taking. And I think, you know, my biggest advice is, like, think long and hard about if this is what you want to do. And I don't think it's right for everybody. Mm-hmm. I really, really genuinely don't. But, like, if you've done the research, you've looked at the market, you've got your niche, you got your funnel, you know that you're the person to do it. Like, stop listening and just get it done. Like, that's all you need to do, is you just need to do something. So that's for the 2 to 3 people who made it through. That's what I want them to do.
Great finish. All right, Spencer, thanks for your time.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Hey, course creators, real quick before we get into today's episode, I've got a little favor to ask. As a lot of you are probably aware, one of my goals for this year is to get this, is to massively grow this podcast and get it to be one of the top ranking podcasts in the marketing space. To do that, what really helps is if I can generate as many ratings as reviews as possible from listeners. So if you're a returning listener, if you could take a couple seconds and just give me a quick rating and review on Apple or Spotify or whatever platform you listen to, that would mean the world to me. Anyway, let's get to today's show.